Hi, welcome to the Accidental Archives, where we watch every episode of 1996 CG cartoon Beast Wars. I'm Daoud.
I'm James.
And today we're watching episode 11 of season 1, The Probe, aired on October 15th, 1996. So we don't have any new Transformers updates, right?
Yeah, not this week, though. This coming weekend, which is going to be the weekend of September 29th through the end of the month, I'm actually going to be going to a Transformers convention.
Which one is it again?
TFCon. It's local to in Northern Virginia. First Transformers Con I've gone to like many years since I went to a BotCon down in North Carolina in late '90s, early aughts. That was a long time ago.
And you said off mic you didn't find any Transformers stuff at SPX, right?
Last weekend I went to SPX, and sadly, no Transformers scenes. Though there are going to be a lot of Transformers stuff here, including J.N. Weedle, who's a really cool fan artist, and I know she did art for like the IDW series. There's going to be a Beast Wars Voices panel with, I believe, Gary Chalk and, I want to say, Scott McNeil. I probably could have double-checked that off mic, but that's what I'm going to go with for now. So hopefully I'll see some cool Transformers stuff. Maybe I'll actually buy some Transformers, and I'll report in. So due to the way we record this, I won't talk about it next week's episode, but the episode after that, because time is weird.
Yes, this entire series kind of shows time is weird. There are millions of years in the past, but they're from the future.
Art is weird because we record on Thursday and post on Monday, so if I said it next week, I would have already gone to it by the time the episode posts.
Now, if you said it, yes. So next week, by the time the episode airs, James will have been back from it, but by the time we record, he'll not have left yet.
Right.
Yeah. It's like it's across the international dateline.
It'll make sense.
Yeah. It'll make sense. No new Transformers updates from me either.
Let's get to this episode, which was written by Craig Miller and Marv Wolfman. And unlike, I think, last episode where we didn't have much to say about the writers, this one we have a lot to say. Craig Miller was a marketing consultant on a lot of movies, like Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, Superman 2, 1981 Excalibur, John Carpenter's The Thing, just a whole bunch of stuff, so IMDb page. I'm not exactly sure what a marketing consultant is, but he did a lot of that uncredited. And while this is the only episode of Beast Wars, he wrote a ton of cartoons in like the early 90s, including three episodes of the Ghostbusters, two with Smurf, G.I. Joe, a series writer for the Godzilla cartoon series. I assume that was like the one with the 90s Godzilla?
Yeah, it was based off of the Matthew Broderick movie.
Yeah. And one episode of Stargate Infinity, because I can't believe that, because I know you're a Stargate fan.
I am. That's the cartoon, though.
I didn't know they made a cartoon of Stargate.
They made a cartoon of Stargate, but because of where it was created in the real-world production timeline, the actual ancients who built the Stargate themselves weren't actually explored much. So in the cartoon, they're giant flying dragon people, whereas in the actual show, they're just like an earlier evolution of humanity in the Milky Way galaxy, not from Earth.
Yeah.
Yeah. but it's got a really cool intro song. Yeah, it's a continuity killer.
Yeah. That'll happen. I wonder if there's, like, any, like, weird sideways continuity, like, if it's, like, it's in universe, it's, like, a show about the actual thing.
There actually is, in universe, there is a show that is based off of the adventures of the actual Stargate teams.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's called Wormhole Extreme.
Nice. I mean, no, like, it wouldn't be the first time I've seen, like, a weird animated thing folded in universe as a weird thing. I don't know if you ever watched, like, the Battletech cartoon from, like, the 90s?
No.
Apparently they folded that into the actual Battletech canon by saying, like, it was basically a Saturday morning cartoon in universe of, like, the events that happened.
Yeah, that's pretty much what happened. Yeah, Wormhole Extreme is an alien who had knowledge of the Stargate program, became the creator for the show, and then the reason why the Air Force didn't shut it down is because they said, well, if someone finds out about the Stargate program, they can, this will give us plausible deniability.
Yeah, and apparently, apparently Craig Miller is still working, where he's working on a UAE animated series reminiscent of Tintin called Majid.
Yeah, he's basically a kid in Dubai who solves mysteries.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah, so it said, like, the IMDb said it was like Tintin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, but anyways, the other writer needs no introduction, where it's Marv Wolfman, who's it's safe to say a legendary comic writer.
Yeah. He's widely known for his comics, and if you've seen pretty much anything based on DC cartoons created in the last like decade or so, he probably created the characters. Like, he's the co-creator for Teen Titans, Bullseye, Blade. Well, I'm really mixing companies right here, but
Black Cat. The new Teen Titans. Before someone tries to correct us.
Yes. Okay. The new Teen Titans. We should. Yes.
Yeah.
He created Tim Drake, Robin, Nightwing, the Young Justice as a series. He created the Nova Corps, so he got some kickbacks from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
For all the Supergirl fans out there, he's the creator of Cat Grant.
Yeah. Also wrote Crisis on Infinite Earths, Tome of Dracula for Marvel. He's done it all.
Yeah. He's a pretty prolific TV writer as well. He actually did two episodes of the G1 Transformers.
Specifically, Return of Optimus Prime, which is not necessarily the best episodes, but I won't hold that against him, since those episodes had a very specific purpose, and that was to bring Optimus Prime back to untraumatize people who watch the movie.
Yeah, blaming him for that sounds like it would be like blaming Straczynski for One More Day. It was editorial mandate type of thing.
I mean, there's a lot you can blame Straczynski for, but, like, that's not it.
Yeah. Yes. So he also did two episodes of Gem, two episodes of Fraggle Rock, one episode of Garbage Pail Kids, Batman Animated Series, one episode of Reboot It. Like, we always got to get that reference in.
Yeah.
You might have been too old for this show, but do you remember Sherlock Holmes in the 22nd Century?
I did not watch it. I remember promos for it.
I watched it. I had to get up early for that because it was like at the beginning of the Fox Kids block. So that's when I had to actually learn when the Fox Kids block started on Saturday mornings. I think I was in like sixth grade or so. Mm-hmm. And that was because before I was just like, get up. Cartoons are probably on. Mm-hmm. But then I'm like, oh, okay. So this comes on at 7 o'clock. I usually wasn't awake by then. So I had to start. That's when I got an alarm clock for the first time. So he also did like 20 episodes of Superman animated series.
Mm-hmm. Wow, I did not know he did that many of that.
Yeah, so it says at least. So if you don't know who Marv Wolfman is, just read pretty much anything from 90s Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And speaking of Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, then we have the director of this episode is Ezekiel Norton, who is primarily a computer animator on the show, but he'll actually direct three episodes of the show, including some very important ones.
Yeah, so he'll be directing Other Voices Part 2 and Nemesis Part 1.
Yeah.
Coincidentally, both part of multi-parters, but not the same multi-parter.
Yeah, like, of course, most mainframe directors, he directed some episodes of Reboot. As well as the MTV Spider-Man series. And tons of Barbie animated specials.
Yeah, which mainframe, who now is known as Rainmaker, I believe, is in charge of, which they're still working with the Vancouver actors, I believe. I think they're just to refer to them as a group, they call them the Ocean Group.
Yeah.
Yeah. Two episodes of the CGI Action Man cartoon, which was on around the same time as Sherlock Holmes.
I remember that. That was, I think, the project they did after Beast Machines and Shadow Raiders.
I think it was like around. I didn't know that was mainframe, but I thought it was like around the same time as Beast Machines.
It might have been 2002,
actually. Yeah, might have been a year later.
I remember that in the era at the same time as like Max Steel, and I remember trying to get in. It's like, this isn't really my thing.
Yeah, no, like, looking back on it, I'm like, wow, this animation is terrible. I mean, I couldn't really get into it either, and I was the target age for that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, apparently the toys still, like, gangbusters, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're definitely too old for this show, but he directed 12 episodes of Viva Pinata.
Ah, yes.
For who?
Poor Rareware. They made most of the games, but they're also well known to, like, people in the N64 who were making, like, Banjo-Kazooie and, like, the Donkey Kong Country games.
Hmm.
And, like, they got bought by Microsoft and published doing their own things, and then basically were, like, made Viva Pinata for, like, a while.
Oh, yeah, they also had a show on the Fox... I think it was... I'm not sure if it was 4Kids or Foxbox, but run by the same people, but 4Kids is... Or not... Fox Kids' successor was the Foxbox, and I believe around the transition from the Foxbox to 4Kids TV came Viva Pinata.
Right.
I mean, it's a cool concept.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so anyway, so Ezekiel Norton was also he's a pre-visualization supervisor, image engine, which is, I believe, it's sound department on quite a few major movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In fact, like, I listed out everything that Craig Miller did that I recognized. There was way too much for me to do for Ezekiel Norton. This guy works a lot.
Oh, good to know that he's keeping busy.
Yeah.
I like that. This is a well directed episode.
So, yeah, and considering its pedigree, if this episode was not good, there'd be something wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, just one more note on Wolfman. He only did, like, this episode of Beast Wars, but he'll actually do a lot more for Beast Machines, just to kind of give you a teaser of things to come in the, well, not very soon, because we still got a lot more Beast Wars to do.
I mean, okay, we're probably going to do some stuff in between seasons, but if we were to do an episode every week, we'd be done in about a year.
Yeah.
From now, yeah. But not that far. Yeah, not that long. But yeah, it'll be a fair bit while.
Yeah, foreshadowing.
Do, do, do. All right. So moving on to the episode.
Mm-hmm.
So the probe starts with Cybertron, and we're sure it's Cybertron this time.
Yep.
Because a voice, which we can only identify as probably a Maximal Elder or some kind of Maximal official.
Yeah, voiced by Doug Parker, though it doesn't sound at all like his Pterosaur voice, which is, you know, probably for the best.
Yes, as we were preparing the tweet before we started recording to let everyone know, we were trying to find a shot of the probe, and I exclaimed, like, I can't believe the same guy is Pterosaur.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but the Elder reports that the Axelon is officially missing now and believes they were probably in another, quote, time zone, quote, unquote. That's the word they use, but not correct. I guess that's correct if you have the ability to time travel.
Yeah, they seem to have a very kind of casual demeanor about the fact that they can just travel through time, which is surprising considering some of the reveals later on, that trouble you can make cause with time travel that we'll see later on.
Yeah, this is probably why they were so worried about them. About Megatron taking a transwarp ship.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really curious about the social implications of Cybertron in the, I don't know, let's say 56th century.
Yeah. But anyway, they sent out a bunch of probes, and one of them passes by our planet in the show, I mean.
Yes, the planet which the Beast Wars is taking place on, which is likely Earth, but not confirmed as. Mm-hmm. So then we cut to Cheetor, Rattrap, Dinobot, and Optimus walking back to base. Cheetor suggests a race and basically says last one there's a rotten egg or something similar. Rattrap, despite being not a kid, does run after him. And Optimus, being the adult in the situation, shakes his head, maximizes, goes into flight mode, and then red lights Cheetor, who runs right into him.
Yeah. Which we also get once after Cheetor crashes into Primal, Rattrap shows, like, don't cats ever get tired of being stupid? Which we'll get a callback later, weirdly.
Yes, and this is some, and this also made me make this note that I've wanted to say this for a few episodes. this show is terrible at animating anything, Cheetor especially, but anything running.
Yeah, I mean, we tend to call it the animation to do something cool, and there's a lot of cool facial animations and acting, but like they kind of have like one running loop for Cheetor, and I understand like animating four-legged animals is like hard anyways, but yeah, it does not look good.
Not just in his beast mode, actually, because when I was grabbing the visual companion for last week's episode, when he's running up to Optimus to give him the antivirus, dear God. Because it's as awkward as him running in beast mode. Not only that, his hand leaves the antivirus thing while he's twisting it in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, I mean, okay, limitation to the time, I understand. So I'm not going to harp on this, but dear God.
Yeah, it's funny, because usually when I see, like, weird animation, it's usually not the action stuff. It's usually the subtle stuff that usually falls apart. So it's kind of weird that it's the opposite here.
Yeah, after he runs into him, he says, come on, Optimus, you didn't have to do that. I was just racing Rat Trap. Optimus says, you didn't see me coming. I could have been a scout. I could have been a Predacon spy. When you're outside the base, you need to pay attention. Which, I thought this was going to come back later in the episode somewhere.
I mean, it kind of does, actually.
Although, I mean, you would think it's like Cheetor needing to learn the lesson, but I think he actually learned it pretty well.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, just because of what happens at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll come up again. So, so if you want to continue on.
Right, so when they walk up to the base, we had a pretty cool shot, a panning shot of Optimus just telling Sentinel to stand down, which lowers the shield.
Yeah, there's a nice orange like force shield bubble around it.
Which I think is the same one we had in Double Jeopardy?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I just remember
that. That wasn't Double Jeopardy, it was like a Better Mousetrap.
Better Mousetrap, yeah. What was Double Jeopardy again? I forgot.
Double Jeopardy was the one where...
Was it where their both bases were going to blow up, but they tried to send a bomb over there anyways?
No, Double Jeopardy was the one with Rat Trap being a traitor. Thinks he's a traitor.
Okay, yeah. I remember these episodes. I just don't... Sometimes I forget which title goes with what.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah.
Particularly because, like, I know there's, like, another, like, there's a later episode called Double Dinobot, which it got it confused. Gets that one, the title confused in my mind.
Yeah, there was an episode I thought was a two-parter, which you reminded me, I think it was, like, second or third episode. You told me, no, it wasn't. I realized later on that the reason why I thought it was a two-parter is because there's a Star Trek episode with the same name that is a two-parter.
Oh, yeah. No, I remember Chain of Command.
Yes, Chain of Command. So going back to Beast Wars.
Yeah, this show. And this episode of this show.
Yeah, sorry, guys. We're just having too good of a conversation.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but I'm sure that's why some of you are listening.
Hopefully you appreciate the banner and not as just going over plot points.
Yeah, I mean, one reason I love podcasts like this is it's like having that conversation with your friends that goes on for hours, sometimes mm-hmm. longer than it needs to, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyways,
we're good about our time.
Yeah, so we cut to inside the Axelon.
Yeah, so Rhinox is picking up a single on the long-range mm-hmm. scanner. And Dinobot thinks it's probably just a Predacon trick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's having trouble getting it. So yeah, so everyone gets to man their stations on the ship. Is like trying to get this thing before Rat Trap gets a visual and says, "I had a hard time making things up," but he says, "Strip my gears and call me a floor lamp." As they see that it is a temporal probe, and everyone gets excited that they can get home, except for Dinobot for some reason.
As like Rat Trap is figuring out, he sweet talks the computer, which. I hope this, I don't remember if it does or not, but I really hope this doesn't continue into Beast Machines.
Don't think so.
Yeah, no, just because, like, the way he interfaces with the computer is a lot more hardwired, let's just say. So, yeah. he interfaces with the computer the same way R2-D2 does. So, sweet talking it is going to be weird.
Mm-hmm.
So the probe moves outside of communications range before they can get it to recognize them, because it didn't detect the Axelon's transwarp signature, because their engines have been down since the crash.
Reinox feels really sullen at his name and tries to encourage him that he's done everything he could, which he, before he realizes that they have another chance, that because of the way the probe works, it's going to circle back around the sun and come back. So they have one more chance to get a signal out. Dinobot's still kind of downcasted about this, though, for reasons we'll find out shortly.
Mm-hmm. So they realize they can... They can ghost the signal, and they build up a signal array on a hill in Predacon territory.
Yeah. Oh, one thing I'm just going to point out, I'm not going to mention every time it happens, but from this point on, as a way to kind of establish tension, there was going to be, like, before scene, they were going to cut to a shot of the probe in the space to give you an idea of where it is. And it's actually a pretty effective device of, like, keeping this thing in your mind, when there's otherwise no way it's going to interact with them directly, because, you know, it's up in space.
Yes.
It's like a really good narrative technique. I wanted to point it out just like as a way to kind of establish, here's where the probe is. The probe's always coming. They got to get stuff done before the probe gets there.
Yeah, I like so I was watching the episode kind of and make my notes in a hurry because I was basically watching it for a few minutes at a time and trying to just get my notes down for what just happened. So I actually was taking those cuts to the probe as opportunities to take my notes.
Yeah. As I said, I don't want to point it out every time it happens because that just makes it seem tedious when it's really not, but it's just like know that it's happening in the background if you're not already watching this episode.
Yeah, it's just their time frame versus ours. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Tigatron is watching their back as they build the signal array, and he muses to himself, well, I wonder if Cybertron has such natural beauty as this planet.
You can also note that Dinobot comments that they're doing this, that this is dangerous because they're doing it deep in Pred territory. And apparently this is the only place they're doing it because it's the only place they get a clear signal. So already kind of upping the danger. Because it'd be one thing if it was just like, you know, outside their own base, like, oh, that's just the thing. But like, no, they're deep in Pred territory.
Isn't their base on a cliff? I feel like, I feel like it would be a clear place, but I guess not.
I mean, we'll just assume there's, you know, like energon interference. Obviously not, because they had enough energon interference, they couldn't get it anyway from the ship. So they had to find a space where there wasn't a lot of energon interference. That's how I interpreted it.
A good point. Plus, we have established that there is a giant energon vein right underneath the base.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, good point. Good headcanon. Mm-hmm. So, that's actually... So, Tigatron's musing brings up a point. Do you think... If and when they do get back to Cybertron, do you think Tigatron would have even liked it?
I actually don't know, because I mean, it depends on the depiction of Cybertron. Like, sometimes you'll just have it be stark buildings, but other times you get like weird techno-organic structures and stuff. So that actually would be an interesting question of like how Tigatron would like react being on Cybertron. Sadly, we're not going to get that answer.
Spoilers.
Tigatron's not going to get to go back to Cybertron.
Yeah, so, Tigatron's not going to get back to Cybertron, although I'm pretty sure he would love the post-Beast Machine Cybertron.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So he hears the... I'm not sure if it's the buzzing or the grumbling of Waspinator.
He also says he smells him.
At first, like, Waspinator and Cheetor were sort of set up to be the adversaries on either side, but right now it's turning more into Tigatron and Waspinator.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure just the giant cat likes to swat the bug.
Mm-hmm.
So, Waspinator says he's tired of searching for Maximals, and Tigatron blasts him, like, here's one, and tells him, next time you're out scouting, how about you pay attention?
He shoots a wing off of Waspinator, who then, like, goes into a tailspin and splats. poor Waspinator.
Yeah, poor Waspinator. Then Tarantula shows up and says, like, well, his job actually was distraction, so he's actually doing his job. And his job was to provide a distraction so I could test out my new toy.
Yeah.
which is just a hovering like camera mm-hmm. bot is what I would describe it as, because it looks like there's a giant lens on it.
Yeah.
But we soon find out that lens is not for video recording.
Yep.
Yeah. So they start the this thing starts shooting at Tigertron. He's dodging and trying to shoot back.
Mm-hmm.
Hearing the weapons fired, Cheetor goes to scout the situation. Dinobot offers to go with him, but he's told he has to go. He has to stay with the array. Dinobot sarcastically says, "Oh yeah, we wouldn't want to ruin our chances to go home."
Yeah, this is what we. This is where we find out what's grinding Dinobot's gears about this whole thing, where he mentions that when they come, when it comes back, it'll be a maximal rescue ship, and for and despite the fact he's with them, he's basically a wanted criminal, and he'll probably be treated as the rest of the Predacons, even though he's been helping them out. Optimus responds like, "You're a Maxwell now. We'll see you'll be treated as one." And Dinobot responds, "What makes you think that I want to be?" Which is kind of a deep note. Just, you know, everyone's like, "Oh yeah, we should be able to work together." But Dinobot is all kind of doesn't really want to be saved because he's the. It just kind of creates an interesting conundrum, which we'll see as Dinobot plays out more. Like, he's working with the Maxwells. But is he a Maximal? What is he like? Is this just kind of a bottle scenario? And if they were off this world, they would still be enemies. It's an interesting idea to keep in thought as a Dinobot's character arc develops in the show.
I agree, but I think it's more of a social political issue because it's the Predacons don't have control of Cybertron. They're
right.
For all intents and purposes, second class citizens. Not necessarily that they don't deserve to be that with just their general nature, mm-hmm. which that's all I'm going to say on that because I feel like I might be crossing into race relations if I go any further.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying like... Him,
there's no racial metaphor with them. Like the Predacons are second-class citizens because they are the evil guys.
Yeah, no, I realize that. But still, like, there are some echoes of, you know... A certain proportion of the population within America who tend to be caught for crimes the same another group would not be because they're being watched closer. That's all I'll say about that. Anyways, the point I was getting to was, I'm sure if they were on Cybertron, it wouldn't be so easy as saying I'll pledge allegiance to you guys.
Mm-hmm.
In order to, you know, be an actual Maximal. I'm sure there's plenty of Predacons who want to just live their lives, but at the same time, they can't really just behave.
I do think they're going for, like, a longer-term thing with this, since this obviously, this plot point doesn't really get resolved within the episode itself, given what happens. But it is good, knowing how Dinobot's story ends up, I can see it being one step on like a journey for him.
Yeah. Like, we're not to jump ahead, but one of his last words is, "Tell my story and tell it truthfully. Let me be." Sorry, I'm honestly just choking up a little bit. Let me be judged accordingly. Yeah, Dinobot. Does not. Oh God, we're both choking up, aren't we?
No. Let's move on to something else. Let's move on to Tigertron's very bad dodge rolls.
Right. So
yeah, as we come back to him, like trying to dodge. Yeah, those are. Yeah, I sometimes try to stamp the issue, but yeah, like those are not very good rolls as he's dodging out of the way of the shots. Tarantulas is just like. Standing on watching him, not doing any shooting, like telling him, "Oh yeah, just you'll tire out eventually." You'd think like he would want to do something to stop him, or Tigertron would think, "Well, I'll shoot you since you're controlling it." But no, that's not what happens.
Yeah, something I learned from Green Lantern First Flight: the one fatal flaw in every weapon is the user.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he gets shot and gets reverted back to beast mode. Tries to maximize again, but he's apparently in the transformation lock. Which learned the name of this little doohickey is the transformation lock lens.
Yeah. Which in a, I don't know if they were, I don't know if this was intentional, but this actually resembles a device from a Gen 1 Transformers. There's an episode called The Autobot Run where Megatron reveals the Transfixatron, which locks the Autobots into Autobot mode. Or sorry, locks the Autobots into car mode.
Yeah, I was gonna say like they can probably still do stuff on their ship if they're just stuck in robot mode.
Uh-huh.
Although happened,
it's not much of a plot point if they get stuck in robot mode.
That did happen though in Transformers Prime. They introduced this thing called a T-Cog, which is like sort of the organ that lets them transform.
Yeah.
Bumblebee got his stolen, mm-hmm. like, cut out of him.
Mm-hmm.
And he was stuck in robot mode.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she had to go on a mission in robot mode. He couldn't hide. Tigertron tries to pounce on Tarantulas, but uh-huh. misses, which right now I'm calling bullshit. Because uh-huh. he's constantly in his tiger mode. He would be comfortable in it. I'm pretty mm-hmm. sure if he tried to pounce on Tarantulas, he would have gotten him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Cheetor comes over after he gets stuck in a stasis web. Cheetor comes in over the hill and in time to stop Tarantulas from delivering what looked like the killing blow, but apparently that's not what he wanted to do. And he gets transformation locked too.
Yeah. Yeah. Because like in the beginning of the episode, Cheetor doesn't pay attention to the surroundings, I guess. I will note that one little bit of thing, like, instead of the gut gun, he actually has his rump gun this time.
Oh, I did notice he had a different weapon this time around.
He referred to it as rump gun, which is probably the best way to describe it.
So was this the one you were talking about a few episodes ago where his tail is part of it?
Yeah, we can probably include a picture of his toy in like the visual companion. Did you include that for the gut gun last time, or did you just show the gut gun?
No. Okay. So I got a shot of him holding the gut gun, and because I wanted to emphasize the overuse of props in that episode, I got him with the entire row of gut guns.
Yeah, we can show a picture of his toy.
Yeah.
So it makes it more clear.
Yeah. So back at the Axelon, Rhinox successfully copies the transwarp signature and leaves to meet the others at the array. Where Scorponok spots the Maximals and sends Terrasaur to report back to Megatron.
Yeah.
This is where we see the Cybertronics.
Yeah, we do.
Okay, yeah, so the Cybertronics translated just says the F word, just says crap, which I'm cleaning up.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because, like...
Which I guess is appropriate. This is bad times for the Predacons.
Yeah, so Megatron...
Yeah. He takes out his Predacon symbol on his chest and, like, hands that to Terrasaur, which is a weird thing.
Which I think it just contains the sensor data.
Yeah.
But usually the symbol is where their spark crystal is.
Uh-huh.
At least in the toys. Yeah, so Megatron wants to know why the Maximals would risk building a signal array so deep in their territory.
Yep.
Tries to ask Cheetor, but Cheetor just rebuffs him.
He's like, why don't you ask him yourself, Mega Dumb?
Oh, he said dumb? I thought he said dump.
I thought he said dumb, but maybe...
It doesn't matter.
Cheetor's obviously the one who's Mega Dumb here with that line.
Well, okay, when he wakes up from the stasis lock, he, for some reason, Megatron decided to come up to his cage with his T-Rex head... arm like right next to the bars. So that's the first thing he sees, and he says, talk about nightmares.
Uh-huh.
So their long range scanners pick up the probe, which Cheetor being mega dumb, just says the probe.
Yeah. Yeah, specifically goes Tarantulas detect something in space and Cheetor goes, the probe.
Cheetor, you're so stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Figuring out what's going on, Megatron orders a full-scale assault.
Yep.
And Tigatron and Cheetor are left unguarded, and they try to swing their way out of their cages.
Yeah, specifically, Tigatron says they gotta get out, and Cheetor asks, how? It's like, well, you always said you were a swinging cat. And then they start swinging their cages.
So the array is finished, and there's some minor squabbling between them, which... considering what happens later is really just heated banter.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So after that, Dinobot turns around and starts walking away and says, "Eh, to the inferno with both of you."
Yeah.
Which I thought was a funny line.
Yep.
Scorponok shoots Dinobot in the back. Again.
Yeah. Yes.
Which then Rattrap blasts out Scorponok's left claunch in a scene which I felt was reminiscent of RoboCop.
Kinda.
Yeah, I know. It's like, well, first of all, the fact that he lost his arm and which he kind of screamed out the same way RoboCop did when he lost his arm, and then plus Rattrap was holding his pistol the same way RoboCop does, or at least except with two hands.
I mean, I could see that.
Yeah. So he's trying to say like, take this, Optimus. Rattrap shoots his hand off and says, "I don't think so." Dinobot stands up right behind him, which you got to remember that Dinobot's just a giant of a transformer, and says, "Yeah, I really don't think so." Dinobot eye blasts him off into the background, and they both look at each other and give each other a thumbs up.
Yep,
nice moment.
Yeah,
I didn't think Dinobot could do that though.
He's got the eye beams.
No, not the eye beams. The thumbs up. I mean, just the way I saw his hand, I thought he... I didn't realize his quote-unquote thumbs were opposable. Yeah, so going back to the dark side, the cast make it out by slamming their cages into each other, which makes the bottoms fall out from them. Tigertron lands okay, but has to catch Cheetor by his tail.
Yeah, I will say there was a cool transition to the scene where there is a wipe... where it's the swinging of the cages wiping the scene and it cuts to where they are, which is a nice technique.
Yes. Okay, so they hurry over to the Predacon repair chamber to try to undo the lock.
Yeah. Did you mention that Tigertron catches a Cheetor by the tail?
Yes.
Okay.
I thought he's supposed to be the one to catch a cop of the tail.
Yeah.
So back at the array, Pterosaur arrives before the rest of them and starts shooting the Maximals. But he flees, and then Rattrap says, "Where's Leatherpuss going?" Dinobot, he always was a coward. That's when Megatron makes another one of his supervillain entrances and says, "Granted, but he makes an excellent diversion." Dinobot rushes. So the fight ensues. Dinobot is the first to rush Megatron and then gets transformation locked and knocked out with some well-placed kick to the face by Black Hawk. Yeah.
It's, I don't know if they're like trying to save budget or, but like, this is the first of several, where they'll do several triple take, like what I like to call like the Sentai triple take of like a scene. And I can't tell this because the fans are just trying to save animation.
Little column A, little column B. So, Rattrap gives him some suppressing fire, and unlike Cyril Figgis, doesn't yell out suppressing fire. I don't know if she listens to us, but Shannon, that was for you. and then says, "No one does that to my team, sister."
Yeah, and he blasts her off, and it actually had a nice bit of continuity. When she looks over the edge, you can actually see where Scorponok is fallen on the ground, still there.
Oh, I didn't notice.
Yeah, they mentioned I was just watching through that scene again, like, you can see him on the ground there.
So Rattrap is figuring out that the little flying thing locked Dinobot in the beast mode. He gets blasted by it because apparently that thing's invisible.
No one looks out, apparently. Apparently, Armel should have been, like, lecturing the whole team on, like, paying attention. Including himself in a bit.
True. Rattrap figures out, that thing must have put you in a transformation lock. And then, like, it's right over his shoulder, and he gets blasted by it. That's just...
Yeah.
And Megatron shoots them both and knocks them unconscious.
Yeah.
And then you cut to Tarantulas trying to strangle Primal.
Yeah.
He's got his claws around his neck, which looked like he was trying to strangle him.
Yeah.
Primal does a cool move. He has a sword in his hand, so he faints by trying to make him think he's trying to hit him with a sword. Tarantulas grabs his arm, which leaves his other arm free to shoot with his arm cannon.
Yeah, point blank. He fires one shot, which, like, blasts through him, and then, like, lifts him up and, like, fires a second shot just to, like, free take him off of his hand, which is a pretty baller move.
Yeah. And then that's when he gets locked in beast mode.
Yeah.
So Primal grabs a steel bar to deflect the missile that Megatron shoots at him.
Well, yeah, Megatron shoots a missile because, like, nothing can stop him at this point. Like in a previous scene, like, Pterosaur tried shooting a missile, but Optimus stopped him by firing off his own antimus. So this time he has to, like, pick up a girder, just, like, literally bat the missile again, and again they do another one of those, like, triple takes of him knocking it away.
Yeah, that was I guess he hit a home run.
Yeah.
Megatron literally has Primal under his heel.
Yeah.
And he says, very resourceful, but in the end, the result is the same.
Mm-hmm.
That's when Rhinox taps him on the shoulder and says, don't counter it, Motorhead.
Yeah. Ace of Spades starts playing up. That doesn't actually happen.
They rush to the array because time's getting close and try to get it online. Rhinox manages to get it ready, but all he has to do is enter the code. And this is when Primal tries to warn him, but guess what's over his shoulder?
Yep.
And so you actually alluded to this moment in a previous episode, but he gets locked into beast mode and can't use the console.
Yeah.
I guess the console they made for this one isn't as hoof-friendly as the ones back in the ship.
Yep.
So, Megatron shoots the array, and his villainous laugh echoes out as it explodes.
Yeah, and it was a cool shot of, like, again, they do another, like, multiple takes of the explosion. An overlay of, like, Megatron's head just, like, laughing. He stopped that, like, you know, as their plan fails.
So then, as he's about to actually kill them this time, Cheetor shows up and...
First you see the Translok get shot, and then Megatron turns around and sees Tigertron and Cheetor are there, ready to stop him.
This plan is actually the inspiration for a later plan of his, which we see that the lock lens get blown up. This thing is a proven strategy, though. Why didn't they rebuild it?
I mean, they don't have the stuff to rebuild it.
Yeah, okay. So Tigertron and Cheetor show up and destroy the land and make Megatron run away.
Yeah, Cheetor says, time for you to decorate a cage, Megadork. It's like, Cheetor's not working.
Yeah.
So
in the previous episode, I pointed out that Cheetor channels his inner Robin right around this point in the series. I really wish I'd saved that joke for today because this was written by one of the most famous comic book writers in history.
Yeah. Yeah, but Megatron sounds like, I think not. Cybertron won't find you out, and the war will go on until I am the victor! And then he runs away, because, you know, he doesn't need to be around there anymore. He's won.
Yeah. I forgot to mention this earlier, but there's actually another instance of Cybertronics when Rhinox finds the probe. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. This Cybertronic actually translates into French. Can you pronounce French, James?
C'est un alphabet très bizarre. Et je ne comprends rien.
I don't think I got that right, but I tried.
Did better than I would have. Yeah, so this translates to, this is a very odd alphabet, and I do not understand anything.
Yeah. Yeah, but anyways, the final scene of the episode has Megatron's away, Cheetor asks Optimus, like, did we get the message out? Are we going to go home? Or probably just tells him sadly, not today, Cheetor, but someday.
Yes. For today, the Beast Wars continue.
Yes.
So today we will not have a character spotlight this week. Sorry, everyone who likes those.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if anyone does. We don't get any feedback.
Yeah. Yeah, since this is more of an ensemble, no one really has a standout moment. But I really freaking love this episode. I like how it plays with the conventions of, like, genre television, where a lot of times, you know, a lot of the villain weeks plot, like, villain raises the plot, heroes defeat it, status quo goes at the end, returns to the end of the thing. So it kind of flips it on its head by having, you know, the good guys are the ones who are actually going to disturb the status quo. You know, if the Maxwells win, then they get their ride home and the show is over. So by having that, when the villains actually get to restore the status quo, so it means they actually can get a win.
Yeah. But speaking of feedback, we actually have some messages from the Golden Disc.
Oh yeah, we put out our call for asking about People's Transformers Collection, and we got from Louis Scary at BossLCA on Twitter, who said his collection was Waspin Eater, Tarantulas, Magnaboss, Wolffang, Inferno, Quickstrike, Silverbolt, Transmetal Megatron, and McDonald's Beetle.
So he also recently went to a con and got some picked up some Transformers stuff, which I snagged a picture of that. He managed to get the Transformers Masterpiece figures of Starscream, Soundwave, and Optimus Prime.
Yeah. He also mentioned that he's pretty sure every one of those Beast Wars toys went the way of the garage sale, which is sadly the fate of a lot of childhood toys.
Oh yeah, no. When I was about to, before I decided to just commute to college, and I was going to be moving into the dorm, I was so worried my dad was just gonna just put everything into a box and toss it. Yeah, I mean, if it's a garage sale, that's one thing, but I honestly thought he was going to just toss it out. Yeah, so far, Lewis is basically just number one friend of the show.
Yeah.
And we're actually in talks with him to guest in a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's all the messages from the Golden Disc we have.
Yeah.
Moving on to our MVPs. So I started. James, who is your MVP?
It's actually hard to pick one because there's like, there tends to be a lot of shifting around. I'm actually going to give it to Megatron because, you know, Megatron's like, as opposed to a lot of like TV villains or at this point past Transformers villains, he actually wins. Like he stops the Maximals from, contacting home. So, means they're stuck on the planet, but it means he actually can, you know, like, he's not, you know, getting arrested or anything.
Optimus Primal, no phone home.
Like, I remember watching this as a kid, and I think that might have been the first time I watched something where the villains won, and like, wow, that could happen?
Yeah, can't think of the first time I that happened when I was a kid. But yeah, that's a jarring feeling, right?
Yeah, I feel like it's probably a bit more common in some serialized television shows now. Like I can think of like episodes of Avatar: The Last Bender where like either they don't get a clean win or
Azula shoots Aang in the back with lightning.
Yeah,
yeah, the fall of Ba Sing Se, basically.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, we'd probably get that a little more. Sorry, I'm just I'm resisting the urge to go on a rant about why I stopped watching Walking Dead.
Oh God, no! We don't need to go into that.
Yeah, no, I'll just say like I realized it was super cyclical and nothing was changing, but So my MVP is also kind of hard to figure out because pretty much everyone got pretty good spotlight for this episode. The only thing I could say that would have made it better was more Waspinator and more Black Arachnia.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pterosaur was utilized enough. Let's just a little bit of Pterosaur goes a long way at this point.
It's true.
Yeah. I guess I'll give it to Dinobot. I'm going to give it a split, actually. I'm going to give it to Dinobot and Rattrap for showing that they're just an old married couple by bickering, yet still being best friends, basically.
Mm-hmm. they're continuing developing relationship.
Those are our MVPs. Going on to our next episode preview. So next episode, there's a attempted mutiny on the dark side, another one, which results in an explosion, and looks like the Beast Wars might be over. Again, in
the gasp. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, might be over again in victory.
Yeah, this podcast will be over. Like, I thought there was a lot more Beast Wars than that.
Yeah, I honestly thought I might. I thought we'd be doing this for another year. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, So that is our episode. Thank you for listening to the Axon Archives. If you have any questions, want to guest on the show, or want to talk about Beast Wars, you can reach us on Twitter at Axon Archives or by email at axonarchives@gmail.com. You can find the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Podcasts, Stitcher, and Podknife. However you like to rate and review podcasts. Mm-hmm. And please leave us rating and review because it helps people find the show. Check out our website at axelon.buzzsprout.com. If you want to find either of us on Twitter individually, I am at Dalfak.
I am at Discord_Inc.
And until next time, the Beast Wars continue?
Question mark.